Okay, welcome every morning, everyone, and good morning. So last time we were a little bit top in the middle, so we couldn't go to the scanning probe microscope, which was kind of halfly planned idea. I didn't thought that we can have time to go it. So we will continue from that. So this is kind of between the topic of today's lecture and the topic of the last lecture, which was this nanofabrication. Okay, so what is scanning probe microscope? So just to remind you the types of the microscope, everybody knows optical microscope. Everybody also knows the limitations, which is a wavelength. Then if you want to go to smaller sizes, nanometer and angstrom, so this is limited to something like a 500 nanometer or something like that. So if you want to go to 1 nanometer or even below, you can use electron microscope. There's a transmission electron microscope and scanning electron microscope. Other one looks scattered electrons, other one looks electrons pass through. And we talked about the scanning electron microscope a little bit on the fabrication electron beam lithography. And on top of that, we have a scanning probe microscope, which we also talked a little bit about, that it has sharp tip. So SPM, scanning probe microscope, that's a kind of general name for many kind of microscopes. But they have a common thing is that they have this sharp tip, which moves along the surface and somehow feels the surface. If you have a, this is a surface, and then you have a tip, and then you just somehow scan it. And if you have a big bump, you can feel it. And then you make a image in your computer. So you can imagine that this is not the fastest possible method to make a picture, but this is very accurate. And you get a 3D image, which is much better than an electron microscope. So you basically keep the tip in a certain distance from your surface, and you record the tip height movement. So it can be that it's not really touching, but it's above. But here, to prevent it to hit this bump, you have to go above, and then you record this movement. And this is kind of a point by point scan, so pixel by pixel. And resolution can be like a 1 angstrom or even atomic resolution in some cases. So it is really good resolution. And how this is done in a practice? You can imagine that keeping a tip like a very close to the surface, it's not the easiest thing to do. So you have a sample stage. Here is your sample, what you are scanning. And you have the so-called piezo scanner, which is piezoelectric material. Piezoelectric material is a material, if you put voltage, it will expand, or if you put voltage other way around, it will shrink. So you can, if you make this kind of cylinder with a different sizes, you can shrink this size and expand this size, which makes your sample move to the left on the figure. And of course, up and down also. So this is your control. It's very precise, under nanometer precision. And then you have your tip, which somehow records the distance from a surface. So this, how it records, defines actually what microscope you are using. But let's just now think that it somehow records it. And you have this kind of feedback signal, which tells you how far you are from a surface. And that feedback signal is manipulated a bit, and then it is fed back to this sample scanner. So it meaning that if this feedback signal tells that you are closing to your sample, you're getting closer, like here, it tells that the scanner that pull down. So it will pull the sample down, and the distance keeps the same. And of course, since you are measuring like atomic, almost atomic distances, there's a lot of noise. So what happens in here, manipulation, is just that you can integrate, so you average a little bit, so you get rid of this high frequency noise. Also, you can somehow kind of, what I would say, try to estimate where are you going. So it calculates a derivative of a movement, so which direction you are going, and it takes a little bit into account beforehand. So it kind of predicts. And these parameters you can tune on a fly to make your image as sharp as possible. There's no exact rules how you can do it, but you just try. And at some point you get a, it depends on a sample, it depends on a tip, and it depends on everything, what is a good parameters. But you can average, you can predict, and then there's just a one gain control, so how much you apply this feedback. So this is how it practice goes. And then you have all this set, it basically automatically keeps the distance. And what is now the signal, what you're using to measure your distance? The first one, earliest one, was so-called scanning tunneling microscope, which takes into account tunneling. This is just to remind what is a tunneling. Now I can see that I still have this. These things here visible now. Okay, now you can see better, also in a hair class. And what is a quantum tunneling? So this means that your particle goes through something, some kind of potential barrier, which is classically not possible. Basically, it means that I would walk through that wall. But it's not for me to go through that wall. It's probably I get dead before it happens. But because every particle inside me, every atom, every electron have to tunnel through that wall same time, the probability for that is zero. But if you look very small items, like electrons and single electron, then the probability to go through that wall or some kind of potential barrier is pretty high. We can even measure, even milliamps of currents where every electron has been tunneling. So it's really happening. And so this is a kind of how you can calculate it. As you remember from a quantum mechanics course, every particle is described by the fake wave function or state function, how you want to describe it. The classical way is to use the wave functions. And you have certain amplitude for that. And the amplitude tells the probability for the particle to be in this area. So now we have this on my screen, 2 centimeter probability. And then you come to the potential barrier, and what happens in the barrier is not that it exactly bumps you away, but you have still a probability. So your amplitude doesn't go immediately to zero, but it decays exponentially. And if this barrier is thin enough, there's still some amplitude left on the other side. And basically there the barrier disappears and you are left with a certain amplitude. So this amplitude tells you the probability to get electron through that potential barrier or through that wall. So if we have an infinite high potential barrier, then it means that this exponential will decay much faster and then it actually goes zero. So the decay rate depends on the height, and then you have thickness of your wall, which all determines how much tunneling there happens. So, first of all, that reminder, we have a scanning tunneling microscope, which means that we have a tip. Now I probably have to a little bit. Now you can see also. So we have a tip and we have a substrate and we put here a voltage. And what happens is that we get current through here. And here at this point, it is tunneling. All the electrons are tunneling through this gap. And then of course current goes here. And in what you are doing, you are measuring this current. So let's put ammeter here. And this is your feedback. And as we saw, yeah, the amplitude goes exponentially down. It means that it depends exponentially on the thickness of this wall. And this wall is now this gap. So your current depends exponentially on that gap, the height of that gap. So it means it's very sensitive measurement for your distance. What is a drawback? It's written there already. You have to have a conducting surface. You have to get the current through the surface. Okay, that means that you have to have some kind of metal or at least semiconductor there. But because this feedback is so sensitive to the distance, you can get very sharp signal, even atomic resolution like this image, what we already saw, this iron atoms. And here you can see silicon surface. So this every dot here is a silicon atom, and you can see that there's some kind of atoms, some atoms missing at some points, and some are a little bit higher than others, so it's not perfect lattice. And to get this kind of resolution, you have to also operate in a vacuum. That can be also a limiting thing. Depends what you are emitting. If you are emitting some biological living thing, then the vacuum is not the best. Okay, but as we can see here, I already asked what are the ripples, and you hopefully remember that they are this electron orbitals. So these are kind of ripples in this amplitude. So here we have a free space and amplitude is constant, but here we have a molecular orbit and amplitude depends on the position. And because we are putting atoms in this kind of ring, we get the ring-like orbitals. So here in the highest point, you have a higher probability to have an electron, and lowest point, you have a lower probability. So you can imagine also the orbitals. So if you do things very well, you can image actually molecular orbitals. So here's this kind of a pentazine molecule, which is shown here. And people have a calculated DFT density functional theory used to calculate what is the highest occupied molecular orbit. So these are now the names you should get used to in this lecture a lot. HOMO and LUMO in short. So highest occupied molecular orbit and lowest unoccupied molecular orbit. And now if we make an image, STM image, we can actually tune by changing this voltage. We can tune what potential we are emitting. So as you know, molecules, I draw here, it's visible here. So if this is a zero level of energy. So this is energy. And if you think electrons, energy is kind of an electron charge multiplied by potential, which is voltage. So this is also good to remember. And that's why the most common unit also for energy used in a nanoscale and particle physics is an electron volt. So basically, if you have a molecular orbital energy here, so let's
this be our luma, and this be our homo.
So these are the orbitals. Now if you tune your voltage to match this value, then all the current what you are measuring is going through this orbit. Then you are emitting this orbit. This we will check later today also about the same idea. But because this is exactly equal to energy, you can tune which energy you are looking. And if you put kind of a very small voltage, of course 0 voltage is not good because you don't get current, but if you get some small voltage which is between here, then what you are emitting is this. So basically you see only the geometry of a molecule. So if you want to look the space the molecule takes in a real space, so what size it is, then this is the best. But now if you tune voltage here, so actually this is some negative voltage because this is zero, or you tune your molecule here, or voltage here, you can emit this homo orbit or luma orbit. This is just a different tip here. This is here using the same molecule as a tip. So this is using a regular tip, but still you can see the orbits here, even with a regular tip. And in this case, basically, to be able to do that, there was one trick. So we have to have a conducting surface. So there was, what was the conducting surface? Copper. But now you put your molecule here. So in my drawing skills, that's a pentosine looking from a side. And now if you put a molecule on top of a metal, everybody knows that what happens is that your molecular orbit will mix with a metallic electrons and everything is messed. So you have to insulate it. So you make a really thin insulator here, which in this case was sodium chloride, so basically salt. Table salt. Very thin layer of table salt there between. So you still, when you come with a tip, you have to tunnel through this, but you also have to tunnel through this. So you have to have a very thin layer, just enough to not make the orbits mix, but still let the maybe now better visible.
This is shining so badly.
Yeah. So just to separate the orbits, but let the current go through. So this is a nice thing in a STM. So you can do this kind of tricks. But as we already noticed here, having this conductor surface is not always easy. So people invented another microscope, Cannon-Brook microscope, called atomic force microscope. The good thing is that you don't need conducting surface. The idea is a little bit different. So you have a cantilever where you have your tip. So this cantilever is kind of spring, so it easily bends. And then you have a laser shining glass cantilever, which is reflected to your detector. And now if you can imagine the distance from here, from your tip to the detector can be like a tens of centimeters, even half meter. So it means that even a very tiny bending here will induce millimeter shift here. And you have a sensitive detectors nowadays, so you can really sense tiniest movement of this cantilever. So this doesn't need a conducting surface. So basically the feedback is just mechanical. So basically you are scratching your surface. You're feeling your surface. So it's kind of interaction between the atoms, and that's why exactly the name atomic force microscope. The one thing you have to remember is that your tip is not infinitely sharp. So if this is what you are emitting, then this could be the size of your tip. And now if you go around, so now we have a bigger tip. So as you see, if we come hit here already when an edge is hitting, and then we can go away only when the other edge is away. So basically everything is widened by the shape of the tip. So this does not need to be taken into account. This is a simple rule for that also, but if you want to calculate it exactly, but usually you just estimate it. But the height sensitivity, the height, what you measure for height, that's always very precise. That's not affected by the shape of your tip. But the width, they are a little bit modified, and this needs to be remembered and using atomic force microscope. And basically, the basic modes of atomic force microscope are so-called contact mode, which I just explained. So you are putting your tip down and you are just dragging all the time, feeling the surface. And this is basically, if you look the force curve between two atoms, you always have this kind of potential, so-called Lennard-Jones potential. So it means that if you're far away, there's no interaction. If you come closer, you actually have attraction between the atoms until they touch, and then you have a high repulsion. So in a contact mode, you are here. So you have repulsion. So you are really pushing your tip to the surface and you have a repulsion, and you are tracking the tip along the surface. Good point, very accurate. Exactly, because this is so steep. So the distance is always the same. You can really feel all atoms. Bad things is that if you think that you have a very sharp tip which ends basically one atom and you are pushing it to the surface and starting to track, you will just wear the tip out. So atoms will be go away from your tip and you are losing it. Also, you can damage your sample very easily. So this is only suitable for very hard samples. The other mode is so-called non-contact mode, where you actually operate in this attraction point. So basically in this case, you put your tip vibrating. So you have a cantilever and a tip at the end, and this is vibrating. So every spring has a certain resonant frequency. So it's vibrating in that frequency. And when you go to the closer to the surface, what happens is that the frequency changes because it feels the force from the surface. And you measure this change of the frequency. And that's your feedback signal. That tells the distance from the surface. Of course, that's not very easy to calibrate accurately. But that actually it does not matter. If you keep that constant, you are always a constant distance away, and then you detect the changes which are accurate. So you are basically not touching, but you are just close enough to feel strong attraction. Bad points in here is lower resolution. You can imagine that since you are not touching the surface, you are feeling not just one atom there, but there are many atoms around. Good things are, note, your tip is surviving nicely and a sample also. And this can be also used for soft samples. But this lower resolution is kind of, you don't want that. You want good resolution. So what is the most common mode nowadays? Actually, it's no more, but it used to be, is the so-called tapping mode. So this is exactly, you put your tip to oscillate, same way than in this non-contact mode. But now you put a little bit more amplitude that you are actually hitting the surface every time it goes down. So you get little bit contact mode every time it hits. So that gives you a precision. And as you can see here, so if you are above the surface, your amplitude is high. But if you go lower, it is reduced because every time it hits the surface. And if a surface goes up, it will be reduced more, and this is your feedback signal. So it is reduced more, and the scanner will take the sample down to keep this amplitude constant. So you are measuring the amplitude of your tapping. And that depends on distance on the surface. So here you can see, for example, there's an AFM image taken with a contact mode. And then so it's very quite nicely precise image. Then you zoom out and take a wider image, and you can see that this is the area where you took the first image. So it's totally ruined. So you really damage your sample. Here, the same with a tapping mode. So you have as good resolution as a contact mode, and then you zoom out, there's no damage. And actually the picture is even better. And in this kind of a tapping mode, there's many other advantages. So this is a height. So this is, for example, these small things, these worm looking things here, they are kind of small DNA origami on the surface, fabricated here. So this is a height image, so this is your feedback signal. So this is telling how the system have to change to keep the distance constant. So this tells the height of your sample. And this amplitude signal is exactly the recorded amplitude. So it looks like a 3D image, because every time you come to the bump, your amplitude is reduced, and then feedback takes its sample away, and then it's got back. So every front surface is reduced amplitude, every back surface is opposite way, increased amplitude. So you get this kind of shadowing effect. And especially handy for DNA imaging is this phase image. So you can also measure the phase difference between your amplitude and your feeding signal. So if you have a sticky surface, you can think that your tip is a little bit sticking, they're not coming out easily. It starts to lag behind. So you get negative phase. If you have a hard surface, it's bouncing immediately back. No phase. So here you can see that the silicon looks like a red because it's a hard, and DNA looks like yellow, so it's kind of lagging behind, so it's sticky. This you can do also in a liquid. You can emit liquid. So this is really good. For example, there's a cell, living cell, imaged by atomic force microscope. So you can really go to the biological environment. And now if you vary this feedback signal, now we deal with a tunneling current and atomic force, but there's millions of others. So we only dealt with a contact mode and non-contact mode, and then the tapping mode, but then you can put magnetic force there, you can put electric force, you can measure work function of your surface, and so on. So this is really useful tool. But as you can see, scanning probe microscope, very little is nowadays anymore done with a scanning tunneling microscope, because it's a special tool. And most of the imaging is done by tapping mode. Then there's also, you can do nano indenting. I don't go into details on this, but this means that you can really push your surface with a hard tip and see how it bends. And you can calculate this, how the tip goes back. So this is load. So this is the distance on the surface. And this is how the load arises when you are pushing the surface. And then it comes back. It comes a different way, not exactly the same curve, because your surface has deformed. And from that difference, you can see, calculate how much your surface has deformed. So how soft is that? And nowadays, actually the most common mold is so-called peak force mold, which is basically tapping mold. But instead of making the resonant fluctuation of your cantilever and tapping by that, you are just pushing your cantilever down every time. So you are basically do nano indenting, but not really hard, but soft. So you are pushing it down and you are measuring the bending and then the up and down. So the frequency is something like 1-2 kilohertz many times. So you do 2000 indentings in a second. And basically you can measure this also, this how much your surfaces change and so on. In this case, and what is a good, you can determine what is the maximum force you apply to the surface. So if you are measuring, for example, cell, you can say that you don't want anything more than a few piconewtons. So you can really stop it always there, so it's not killing your cell. And it's easy liquid emitting, because in a tapping mode, the problem is to tune the frequency in a liquid, because that's a mess. Frequency in the air is nicely, but when you put a liquid, you get some bending mode due to a liquid. And instead of one frequency, you get tens of them, and then you just guess what is the correct one. You can also do some really fancy stuff, like here. You put one carbon nanotube between two AFM tips, so this is some special device, and you can bend that and measure the properties of that. Or here, you put a protein, you attach to the protein to the surface from one end, and then the other end is attached to the tip of the atomic force microscope, and then you start dragging it up. And you measure the force, bending of your cantilever. And you can see that it bends. Yeah, so the signal goes up, it means it bends, and then it rapidly goes down. Why it goes down is that this protein is constructed from this kind of, how they are called? Let's call them knots. They are folded protein, they are not knots. But kind of different units of the protein which are folded separately and then they are connected. So it drops because one of these knots or units will default. So it goes straight like this. Then you start pulling again. And then of course, at some point, the length of this is reached and you start getting new force, again bending. And then the second one defaults and so on. So you can actually calculate how many this kind of folding units you have in your protein. And here the final one is reached and you detach the whole protein. So you can make this kind of biological studies in the atomic force microscope. Okay, so this was basically what I have to say from SPM, and I think maybe we take a 10-minute break here before going to the electronics. Okay, so let's continue at 10 o'clock.